You're listening to the Heavy Brain Podcast, the podcast that addresses why we fail in our diet and exercise efforts with a psychological twist. Join host Tommy Caldwell as he breaks down the principles found in his best-selling book to help you take back your health and begin using your mind to control your waistline today.
Welcome, everyone, to the Heavy Brain Podcast and part two of the five fitness factors you must understand in order to take control of your health once and for all. So quick, let's do a little recap from what we learned in part one of this series. And part one was all about the primal conflict. So the main takeaway from understanding the primal conflict is that as a human being, you are hardwired to overconsume. You are hardwired to seek out high energy foods. You are hardwired to be inactive and lazy when you have the opportunity to do so. And we're also very effective fat stores because of the primal conflict, or the scarcity portion of the primal conflict. And that is that humans evolve during times of scarcity. So we have all these innate instincts that used to keep us thriving, alive, and reproducing during those evolutionary periods, but they have now become maladaptive in the modern world of abundance. So you have this brain that is hardwired to overeat, to seek out high energy foods, to have a tendency towards laziness, and this biology that is very effective at storing fat, because being in an energy surplus during times of scarcity kept you reproducing and kept you alive. So the most important takeaway from that part one is that your poor food habits do not stem from your personality. We usually attach our personality to our poor eating habits, but your eating habits at their very core are not a you problem, they are human problems. So you need to forgive yourself for your incongruent health actions. So overeating, consuming the wrong foods, or overconsuming unhealthy foods, all these sorts of things that we usually say, this is a problem with me. It's really a problem with human beings. And that doesn't mean you excuse yourself from fighting for change, because you can turn all this around. But you need to understand that there's no sense in attaching your personality to your core unhealthy actions that you take part in each day, because it's hardwired into us as human beings. So now in part two, we are going to talk about how, as a modern human being, your adverse life experiences, as well as the modern stresses that we face, they push us further into this form of self-medication using those primal drivers. So the first thing I want to do is play for you a brief clip of a seminar that was conducted by Dr. Gabor Mate, as you know, is one of my key mentors, where he talks about the roots of addiction and food addiction and obesity specifically, using this stress, trauma, adverse life experience model. So give this a quick listen, and then we will get into this part of the series more in depth.
People that eat too much, or whether we're looking at people who starve themselves, we just say anorexics. So you got both ends of the eating spectrum, if you will. But really, they're both at the same end of the spectrum, because their relationship to food is actually determined by suffering. So their relationship to food is in some way to not to deal with suffering, but to transcend it. A friend of mine, a physician in the States, a colleague, I should say, but he's sort of a friend, his name is Dr. Vincent Felitti, and he's an internal medicine specialist in San Diego, and he was working at a food clinic, at least an obesity clinic, and they found at this clinic that they could successfully help people lose weight by rigorous dietary control. But what couldn't they do you imagine? They couldn't have them keep it off. people kept putting it back on and putting it back on. And Felitti finally did something quite extraordinary for a physician. He actually listened to his patients. And what they told him was, well, I'll read you what he says. Here we unexpectedly discovered that histories of childhood sexual abuse were common, as were histories of growing up in markedly dysfunctional households. It became evident that traumatic life experiences during childhood and adolescence were far more common in an obese population than was comfortably recognized. We slowly discovered that major weight loss is often sexually or physically threatening, and that obesity, whatever its health risks, is protective emotionally. In other words, what Felitti discovered about food addiction is that it wasn't the fundamental problem. It was actually the person's attempt to solve a problem, the problem that arose out of early childhood trauma. This, of course, this observation led to the very famous adverse childhood experiences studies, the ACE studies, where they looked at a large population in the Kaiser Permanente system. Kaiser Permanente is a big insurer and health provider in the States. They looked at 17,000 or 14 to 17,000 adults. And they elicited a history of childhood, and they found there were 10 categories of childhood adverse experience, and there were, if I can remember them all, physical or sexual or emotional abuse, neglect, a parent dying, a parent being jailed, violence in the family, a parent being addicted, a divorce, addiction in the family, mental illness in one of the parents. For each of these adverse childhood experiences, the risk of obesity goes up exponentially. Not just the risk of obesity, by the way, also the risk of addiction in general, including substance use, injection use, and so on. Also the risk of autoimmune disease, such as rheumatoid arthritis, such as scleroderma, such as multiple sclerosis. Also the risk of cancer goes up. So, in other words, the eating problems seem to be on a spectrum of responses to trauma somehow.
So that's pretty powerful stuff there. And you might be listening to that and thinking to yourself, well, I don't have a history or a past that includes sexual abuse or a jailed parent or a divorce or anything like that, but I still struggle with my weight. And I thought the same thing when I originally started looking into that research, the connection between the ACEs study and obesity. So I created my own study called the FROST Survey, or the Food Relationship Origin and Sensitivity Test. So this is a survey that went out and was completed by over 600 people who were actively trying to take control of their health and fitness, where I used more common, lesser traumas as the questionnaire in the survey. So instead of, things were included like sexual abuse, physical abuse, but also things like bullying, purposelessness, lack of support and lack of friendships, not having a parent or guardian that you felt like you could go to or that supported you. And we adjusted for the outcomes with age, sex, and a bunch of other factors. So here's some of the key results that were found in the FROST study, is that each point increase in a lack of support increased the chances of the person's obesity by 20%. Each mode of unhealthy self-medication that they noted, whether it was snacking or overeating or anything like this, predictably increased the chances of obesity by 26% for each point. And this was all after adjusting for age and sex. And in some cases, the increased scores from things like bullying, purposelessness, lack of friendships, not having a parent or guardian that the participant felt like they could go to, increased the chances of obesity fivefold. So there is unquestionably a connection between adverse life experiences, how we deal with those adverse life experiences as adults, and how the unhealthy dealing and medication for the discomfort we face from those adverse life experiences leads to negative health outcomes. So let's be clear on what an adverse life experience might be. And that is any stress that you faced from the womb up until yesterday that at the time you were not equipped to deal with in a healthy way. So your mind and body very intelligently develops these immediate defense mechanisms that are helpful in getting through that moment, but harmful or maladaptive to you in the long term. So here's an example of that, just to make a clear example. So maybe you were a bit heavier as a kid or heavier in the eyes of your parents, and your mom or dad or both of them would make comments about what you ate or how you ate at the dinner table when you had sit-down family meals, pointing out that, you know, maybe you're a little bit overweight, maybe you shouldn't eat so much of that, maybe you should eat less of this. And this sort of conversation and an implication from someone like your parents, who are supposed to be your biggest support system, led you to feel shame when eating in front of people, and it drove you to eat in secrecy. And you would shamefully consume foods by yourself while hiding in your room or in a place where you couldn't be seen. Now, as an adult, you eat in a very controlled manner while eating in public or in front of other people. But then when you're on your own, you binge on food in a guilty and shameful way. And this sort of action leads to negative health outcomes. So that's just an example of what I'm getting at here. You don't need to suffer big life traumas and adverse life experiences to have an unhealthy form of coping. The biggest form of trauma by far are physical and sexual abuses, even abusive emotional, in the emotional category can go into there, that lead to the most extreme outcomes like severe drug addiction. But lesser traumas like social anxieties, bullying, these relationship issues with your parents, not having support, lacking a sense of purpose, or feeling like you have something that you're good at in your life, all of these little things can lead to smaller forms of coping and self-medication that we do through food, alcohol, laziness and lethargy, technological distraction, all of these more socially acceptable, easily accessible forms of self-medication that most adults who are unhealthy and overweight use in their life. So the pain and discomfort can be too much. The pain and discomfort from our sensitivities to these sorts of modern situations and emotions lead us to look for food, alcohol, technological distraction, and laziness or lethargy in order to either distract us, stimulate us, or numb us from these sorts of modern discomforts. So some common situations and emotions that adults struggle with in these areas as far as emotional sensitivities are stress, anxiety, and fear. And you'll know exactly who you are. Some of us are very susceptible to stress, anxiety, and fear. Some of us are susceptible to shame, sadness, and guilt. Some of us are susceptible to disgust and self-loathing. Some of us are susceptible to things like anger and frustration. And some of us are susceptible to things like boredom and purposelessness. And when you're susceptible to a particular complex of emotions, you are going to medicate those emotions in an unhealthy way when you face them in modern life. So using the example of the child who eats in secret, there's probably some guilt, shame, sadness, and self-loathing that are attached to this person's adult sensitivities. So when this person steps on the scale and the scale goes up, or they don't fit into a pair of pants that they used to fit into, or they look in the mirror and see a more unhealthy version of themselves, or they compare him or herself to a friend or a neighbor or an Instagram model, these sorts of emotions start to reemerge. So the emotions of shame, guilt, sadness, and disgust. And these feelings that this person is innately sensitive to are so uncomfortable and so painful that they must be medicated with food and distraction. And this is the destructive cycle that most overweight adults are stuck in. You have this emotional sensitivity that is triggered by these sorts of modern situations that we face. And we are not equipped to deal with those modern emotions or these current real-time emotions that we face. So we self-medicate them with food, with alcohol, with technology, and with laziness and lethargy. Because when we are doing those things, we can stimulate ourselves, we can distract ourselves, or we can numb ourselves from that pain. And the discomfort and pain can be such a problem that this is something that we are constantly driven to do. So that is the problem. And that is all you really need to understand about the problem. What your question is going to be now is, okay, I can make those connections. How do I solve the problem? So just like in part one, here is a five-step plan of how you can start to take control of these adverse life experiences, the emotional sensitivities that are born out of those experiences, and the modern triggers that push you into self-medicating those emotions and feelings in an unhealthy way. So first thing is you have to normalize it. You must understand that your problems are human. They are common. You are not alone in them. It is not about you and it is not about now. You are just simply doing the best you can with what you have. So again, it's not an excuse to continue living inside of that problem and medicating that problem in an unhealthy way, but stop beating yourself up over it. Normalize it. Your problems are human. It's not about you. It's not about your personality. It's about being a human being. Then, step two, you need to lay out the triggers for these emotional sensitivities that you self-medicate with in unhealthy ways. So an example would be when I get stressed about finances, or when I get anxious about work situations, or when I'm fearful when thinking about my future health, I seem to turn to unhealthy coping mechanisms for comfort. So establish what those triggers are in your modern life that lead you to eating or alcohol or snacking or any of those sorts of things that you know are causing you long-term health problems. Then step three is get physical. So start to face the emotion and learn what it feels like. What does the emotion feel like? So sadness can feel like there is a lump in your chest. Sadness can make you slouch and lose posture and have that sort of defeated physical appearance. Anger can make you hot. Anger can make you red. Anger can make your heart rate increase, where you can feel the irritability. Disgust can make you feel sick and make you feel nauseated when reflecting on yourself. It can bring you a sense of clear self-hatred. It doesn't matter what it is, but when you think about these are the triggers, these are the situations when I start to become susceptible to these sorts of emotions that I'm sensitive to due to these adverse life experiences, what does it feel like? Get right into it. What does it feel like when I'm in that place? Because once you establish the feeling, you can ask yourself, how far back can I trace this feeling? When I feel that anger, that frustration, that hotness, that heat in my face, in my body, my heart rate increasing, that irritability, where does that take me to when I can establish that feeling? Can you attach those sorts of physical feelings to the original event or events that created the sensitivity? So can you, you know, using the example that we've used all throughout this episode, can you go back to the dinner table where your mom or dad or both of them unknowingly and unintentionally increased your sensitivity to food-based guilt and shame? If you can start to feel that feeling and get right into that emotion that you struggle with, you can very likely trace that back to where it all started. And this is why it's important. When you can attach a physical feeling to your emotion, and then you can take that back to, well, where did this all begin? Where can I start to think about where this feeling started? Well, now in real time, when you experience that emotion that you struggle with, that feeling, you can go back to where it all started. And then you can ask yourself some important questions. When you go back to that place, did that version of you deserve to feel the way that you feel, the way you felt at that time? Did you deserve to feel that guilt and shame? Of course you didn't. Do you deserve to feel that way now? Do you deserve to continue perpetuating those feelings of guilt and shame that are born out of this thing that happened to you when you were younger, the situation that you faced that you didn't know how to deal with, so you created these sensitivities and defense mechanisms against? Do you deserve to continue to live with that now? Of course you don't. And now you can understand that your reaction to current emotions are not about the current situation. It is about this unhealed moment in time that you have never gotten over. So when you step on the scale and you feel sadness or disgust, it isn't about the scale. It isn't about your current weight. It isn't about right now. It's about that moment in time when someone had the power to make you believe that you deserved to feel that way. And you have not reconciled that moment in time, and you need to go back and heal that. So again, that 1 to 5 is, number one, understand that your problems are not about you. They're not personality problems. These are human problems. Everyone struggles with them to some degree. Then you need to lay out the triggers of those emotions that you tend to self-medicate for in unhealthy ways. When you're stressed, anxious, or afraid, when you're sad or frustrated, or you're angry, or you have this feeling of disgust, where do those live in your life now? What sort of things trigger those feelings and emotions? Then get physical with it. What does the emotion actually physically feel like? What are the physical feelings that come up when you face those triggers in real time? Once you understand that feeling and get in touch with it, where does that take you to? How far back can you remember feeling that way? Feeling the emotion both from a psychological standpoint as well as the attached physical feeling. Now go back to that time and begin to reconcile and heal that moment in time. You did the best you could at that time with the tools you have, and it has created these maladaptive sensitivities and defense mechanisms. And every time you struggle in real time in those places that drive you to unhealthy self-medication, like overeating, like snacking on high energy foods, like being constantly distracted by TV or YouTube or your smartphone, or being lazy or lethargic because sometimes it's the only thing you can bring yourself to do in order to numb yourself, to distract yourself, to stimulate yourself out of those feelings, those uncomfortable feelings. Go back to that initial point in time, have the conversations with yourself, and heal that part of your life, and you will reduce your need for unhealthy self-medication. So just to recap part one and part two, the primal drivers, as a human being, you are innately driven to these unhealthy actions. These unhealthy actions used to serve us in time of scarcity, still live within us now, hardwired, but now we live in times of abundance. So we suffer right away. And now we're further pushed into those mechanisms, those primal drivers, now as a form of self-medication, for our unhealed parts of our lives that have been created through these adverse life experiences. And now with modern stress, trauma, and everything that comes along with it, we're further pushed into those primal drivers, but now as a form of self-medication for these discomforts and these pains. These are things you absolutely have to understand and address if you are ever going to change your habits and behaviors. Because it's never about, oh, I don't know what foods to eat. I don't know what exercises to do. Yes, some amount of education and structure is important, but you'll find that the reason why you fail in your health and fitness goals is because you can't apply the things you already know you need to do. You know what good food is. You know that overeating is a problem. You know that late night snacking is a problem. You know that sitting on the couch for 3 to 4 hours a day is a problem. You know constantly staring at the TV is a problem. The question is not what should or shouldn't you be doing. The question is, why can't you do the things you already know you should do? And why can't you stop doing the things that you know you need to stop doing? This is how you answer those questions and get to the core of your problems, is part one and part two. And now we are going to start moving into more surface level issues from part three to part five. And that's when we talk about global environmental factors, proximal or personal environmental factors, and then our pure biological factors that can lead us further into these health problems. And that's what we're going to cover in part three, four, and five. And then we'll do a bonus part six with real surface level stuff like exercise, diet, and all these other sorts of things that can be helpful once you've established the real core of the problem. But that's it for today's podcast. As always, if you can subscribe, share, rate the podcast, get it out there. If you find it helpful, put it out there so it can help more people. And I want to thank everyone for listening in. And I will talk to you again when we get into part three, the global environmental factors that lead to poor health outcomes.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe and get all future episodes directly on your preferred electronic devices.